To order. It is 4 o'clock, and we are here today to take public testimony on two bills. That's HB 4002, the Resource Rebate Program for Residents, and HB 403, Appropriation Energy Relief Rebate Fuel Tax. It is 4:03. Present today are Representative Dahlstrom, Representative Newman, Representative Salmon, Representative Olson, Co-Chair Faircloth, and myself, Representative Ledoux. And so we might as well get into public testimony. And I see we've got a number of people here that are signed up. So with no further ado, we will go into public testimony. Representative Faircloth.
Madam Chair, I'm confirming for the record that we are being teleconferenced in so others around the state can call in.
Thank you. All right, we will begin public testimony. And the first person on my list is Inez Webb. And Inez, will you just give us your name again and your affiliation for the record?
Sure. Can you hear me all right?
Certainly.
Inez Webb, and I'm just a citizen. I would like to thank you. I'd like to testify in support of House Bill 4002 and House Bill 4003. Excuse my voice. I haven't had much of one for a couple of days. But we are all aware of the devastation of increased oil prices to our economy. We hear about it daily and feel it in our pocketbooks regardless of where we reside. I was born and raised in the same community as both my parents and both my grandmothers, Dillingham. I'm fortunate. I have a decent job and live in the largest village in Alaska, Anchorage, where energy costs are still, at least for the moment, within reason. That is not the case for my family and friends in rural Alaska. My adult children and my mother live in Dillingham, where the cost of living is astronomical. As you know, there are many factors involved with these higher costs, but transportation is the key. Consumer products have to be barged in or flown in. Today, a gallon of milk is almost $8. A small box of cereal, $7.50. Half gallon of ice cream is $9, and a small package of diapers, $30. And then there's the cost of fuel. Last week, gas was $6.23 a gallon. I don't know what it is today. And I wanted to also note that Dillingham is a hub community. Surrounding villages have prices that are much higher. On a personal note, and in an effort to help my family, I use every means possible to assist with these soaring costs. I buy products in Anchorage and transport them to Dillingham, utilizing every shipping possible from snail mail, which isn't always affordable, to coercing colleagues into hauling extra pieces of luggage when they travel. Although all effort helps, it is not enough. My family and friends in rural Alaska are at risk. While House Bill 4002 and House Bill 4003 are a short-term fix for a nationwide problem, they will help Alaskan families and the highest risk for whom energy survives the long winter. Alaska is one community. In order to survive, we need to pull together and create a long-term strategy for all Alaskans. Please provide funding for these bills. Thank you for your consideration. I would like to also thank you for your dedication and service. Your job is not easy, but your effort is appreciated.
Thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions for Inez? All right, thank you very much. And incidentally, I neglected to mention that Representative Edgman is online with us. Next person that I will be calling is April Ferguson.
Hi. My name is April Ferguson, and I'm serving as the acting COO for Bristol Bay Native Corporation. I want to thank Representative Faircloth, Representative Ledoux, and members of the committee for hearing testimony today. I believe there is no other issue before the state as important, as critical as energy, and I commend your foresight in proactively and aggressively addressing this issue before this coming winter. All the communities in our state have been seriously affected by the increased costs of fuel. Those communities off the road system, which in Alaska means the majority of communities in the state, are seriously challenged with the problem of how they will maintain their infrastructure and their community members over the coming winter. We are facing a state of emergency in the state of Alaska, and I sincerely appreciate the efforts of this committee to bring this issue to the attention of the legislature at large and to the general public. If immediate solutions for home heating fuel are not addressed right now, we will be airlifting emergency shipments into small communities at a great cost to the state in the spring. HB 402 and HB 403 are pieces of legislation that recognize there's an economic train wreck coming, and these proposed measures will certainly help us to get off the track before we get financially hit. Everyone in our state agrees there will be no one simple solution to Alaska's energy problem. We are the largest and also the most geographically diverse state in the Union. As a result, our transportation corridors and infrastructure are unique and they're underdeveloped. Delivering fuel in a timely and economical fashion requires a massive and cumbersome distribution network. The fact is that our state has become diesel dependent. I spoke to a resident of South Naknek yesterday, and he told me that 40 years ago, every household had a wind charger and a set of battery banks. Then diesel came along, and everything changed. So change is coming, and we are willing to change. All the communities in Bristol Bay are preparing for a lean winter. The magnitude and speed of this change, however, is unprecedented. I'm asking the legislature to come together on this issue and reach out and grab their neighbors by the hand. We have to help each other, and we have to do it quickly. The dramatic increases in oil prices over the past 2 years could not have been predicted. Recent studies by the University of Alaska in 2007 showed that some households are paying as much as 47% of their income for home energy costs, and that was last year. What do we expect them to do this winter? And where do we think the prices are going to go? We have no idea. The dramatic increases in oil prices over the past 2 years have had a devastating economic effect on all Alaskans. And meanwhile, the price of oil has been very generous to the state budget. Let us use our natural resource wealth to address the immediate energy needs of all our citizens and to establish long-term plans to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels. I would like to add that the dramatic fuel increases that every area of our state is experiencing are not just adversely impacting individuals. This has had a severe and debilitating effect on small business, schools, water and waste facilities, airports, ports, ferry systems, processors, and fishermen. We need to invest in maintaining the infrastructure that we have built across our great state at such great expense. It takes communities, and let's take care of our own. The Bristol Bay Native Corporation strongly supports both HB 4002 and HB 4003. The $1,200 rebate and the provisions that would protect low-income individuals from losing other federal or state benefits as a result of receiving the energy rebate contained in 4002 is good policy in a time of severe economic conditions and state revenue surplus. The supplemental appropriation to cover shortfalls in the funding of the PCE contained in 4003 is essential to dampen the effect of higher fuel costs on electric costs in all off-road areas of the state. BB&C also supports consideration of a lifeline family fuel payment to ensure that adequate supplies of heating fuel are affordable for all households, perhaps along the lines of the Power Cost Equalization Program. BB&C also respectfully asks that the legislature consider a change to the PCE formula that would recognize the dramatic effect that higher oil prices have had on the cost of electricity in areas that are dependent on diesel fuel. We suggest that the 52% per kilowatt hour cap in the payment calculation be indexed to changes in the average ANS West Coast oil price from the average fiscal 2007 price of $61.63 per barrel as reported by the Alaska Department of Revenue. A long-term energy strategy is also needed, and BB&C strongly supports the AFN's recently passed resolution laying out the basics of a long-term energy policy. This policy would continue the longstanding goal of providing for the equalization of energy costs for all Alaskans, while at the same time providing significant funding for long-term development of alternative energy resources and conservation measures. I thank you for your attention to this matter, and I would like to emphasize that action taken now will save money, embarrassment, and heartache later. And imagine, if you will, the headlines that will advertise the Alaskan communities fragmenting, in migration, infrastructure failing in a state with a multi-billion dollar surplus. It doesn't make sense. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'm wondering whether you could give our committee aide a copy of your comments so that we'd have them for the record. Mm-hmm. Is there any questions for Ms. Ferguson before?
Okay.
Did you have something?
I have a question, Madam Chair. Go ahead.
Cut.
April, at the first hearing or the rollout from the administration, we talked about bulk fuel prices.
Yep.
And the committee asked whether there was enough funding or loan guarantee available for that. When looking at bulk fuel, can you give us any indication of how you think the community of Dillingham is preparing for the upcoming winter? And if I could back up, when we were in Barrow, they said that they were still using oil or diesel that was purchased under last year's shipment that was coming in. So they were going to see a dramatic increase when this summer's bulk fuel hit the gas pumps. But they were still using up the old, so the community hadn't been faced with it yet. Can you tell us anything at all about Dillingham?
I think the situation in Dillingham is very much the same. And we have been interviewing local community members. We've been talking with fuel distributors. We've been looking at the tank situation. I guarantee you that the people in the Bristol Bay region, in all areas of the state, are not sitting on their hands on this, that there are inventive minds all over trying to come up with different solutions. And we are trying to develop a policy paper, which on bulk fuel storage, on the PCE indexing formula, that we will provide to you. It takes a little while to, you know, to come to agreement on all of these kinds of things, or to come up with a solution that's going to work for everybody. But yes, this is forefront on our minds and the people and all of the agencies in the Bristol Bay region.
Did you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up, Sarah Fisher Gould is who we had spoken to, and she had indicated to my question that we thought that we had enough money invested in the loan guarantee program. Is that what the committee recalls, that response? I'm not sure if I'm framing the question exactly right, but it didn't seem like there was urgency in us making an action during the special session to either increase the funding contribution for the bulk fuel loan guarantee program so that someone could come in if the community was suffering to buy in excess. I'm just asking if you would maybe make a phone call, or I can certainly take your name and follow up later to see to get the two connected so that I make sure that Sarah understood my question appropriately.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Newman, and then Representative Olson, and then Representative Salmon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You didn't know you were in the hot seat. Well, just trying to get provide more information to the community. So thanks for coming over west to east. You know, the Bristol Bay Native Corporations, we've heard information at the Native Corporations. We've seen information that they're doing fairly well in the last few years, too. What is Bristol Bay Native Corporation doing as a Native Corporation? Are you doing any cash contributions to help people out? What are you doing in that part to help your own people of that part of the state out?
I'm speaking on behalf of Bristol Bay Native Corporation, and we are a for-profit corporation, and we issue dividends on a quarterly basis. I imagine that we have probably 40% of our shareholders live in the region. I'm not speaking just merely to the situation of our shareholders. Many of our shareholders, they are married to, I mean, they're intimately connected with the community. We are talking about Alaskan citizens. We're talking about communities here. And I think all of our rural areas, all of our remote areas, all of our off-the-road communities are going to be in grave situations this year. I don't know what other private for-profit corporations are donating to the citizens of Alaska. I mean, we'll certainly do what we can, but we are for business enterprise, and what we do for our shareholders is pay quarterly dividends.
Yeah, I was just, thank you, Madam Chair. I was just kind of curious as to what you're doing to try and work within and help yourselves as much as you can. Also, if you could talk to any internal programs that you have to reduce energy costs. Are you investing in solar power, wind power generation, especially Native Corporation? Are they investing in anything like that, hydropower, to help reduce your energy costs locally?
I think that all of the communities are interested in alternative energy, and that the monies provided to the weatherization and to the Alaska Power Authority are going to be available for residents around the state, and we and those agencies that are out in the region are certainly going to make as much use of those programs as possible. And while I'm here, I would make a pitch for regional power authorities so that the remote areas of the state do have access to some of those funds and that they don't really all get allocated to the rail belt. I'm really in favor of the monies that the legislature is considering allocating to alternative fuels, but I am a little concerned that and I love Fairbanks because I grew up there, but you know their hydro project is going to suck off most of that money.
Just a quick comment, I mean, Madam Chair, so I don't know if my question was answered. Is Bristol Bay Native Corporation investing in programs like turbo, air, wind, solar, anything like that to try and help reduce your own energy costs? I didn't hear anything. I didn't hear you say yes to that.
Well, the question, the way it's framed, is difficult to answer. We are a for-profit corporation, and we will certainly, we'd love to invest in alternative energies, and we would like to do that. What you're talking about is, are we buying wind energy programs for people out there? I mean, I think the people of our region are exploring as many alternative energies as possible. I just visited Dillingham, in fact, and there are some incredible alternative energies that are springing up in the community. People are using external boiler stoves that reduce the dependence on diesel, frankly, to zero. In our region, that's a little problematic because there's a limited quantity of wood available to use these, but it's an extraordinarily inventive idea. People are eager to explore wind alternatives out there, and I think part of the immediate roadblock, although I'm sure that the Energy Authority is soon to deal with this, is having mechanisms to distribute the funds and to wade through all of the good ideas that they're soon going to be faced with out there. I mean, there's all kinds of people coming up with good ideas, and we would like to be part of the solution, I guarantee you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Olson, and then Representative Salmon, and before we continue any further, however, I would like to acknowledge that Representative Cisna has joined us. We also have in the room with us Senator Wagner, and online from the Fairbanks LIO is Representative Kawasaki. So, Representative Olson.
Oh, thanks, Madam Chair. How many bulk fuel dealers do you have in Dillingham?
I believe there's two.
How do the prices run? Are they comparable or the same, or is there competition? Or?
I think that's similar to what Kuchar Ledoux says, and believe me, I am no expert on the details here. I'm a resident of Anchorage, but I think currently the price of home heating fuel is about $5.60, and there are people here who have more expert than I am who could certainly correct me, but that is because they are utilizing the fuel that was bought in bulk at a different rate. And so I'm anticipating when, actually I'm not an expert on how this is all divvied up, but there's the spring buy and the fall buy. So we don't know what it's going to be here in the next go round. But I also think that these fuel prices, I want to say, track what the national rate is. I'm not the person to ask on this, really. I'm not. But I do know that some of our villages, the cost is up to about $8, $8.50 a gallon.
Thank you.
Representative Salmon, but before I want to acknowledge that Representative Wilson is online also. Go ahead, Representative Salmon.
I just want to make a kind of slight statement on, I know the situation in your area because I have a lot of them in that same area, especially when we're talking about price of fuel. In one of my villages, I just got a call there about 3 weeks ago, and they said their fuel is up to $8 a gallon. And for heating fuel, for $1,200, it'll be 150 gallons. And you know how those going to get, you know, 40, 50, 60 below. It doesn't last very long. 3 months is that's a long time for 150 gallons. But that's about all. It could, this solution on one of our bills at 402 is going to be only for this year. Next year, the prices of fuel, we're going to see, you know, the problem continue. Do you have any solutions for further, like 2, 3, 4 years down there?
I think that, again, our whole state is wrestling with solutions, and I guarantee there's going to have to be a lot of them. And I think probably a $1,200 energy rebate is going to be a drop in the bucket, and I only hope that that does go to cover people's home heating fuel costs. But the fact is that we have to do something immediate. We have to do something now, and then there has to be the next step and the next step. We're going to have to be coming up with solutions all winter long, because this is not going to go away. And certainly we want to use our excess surplus wisely, but what can we do now, then what can we do next month? This is going to be all of us together trying to figure out a solution. But we are an Alaskan community, and I really want to emphasize that. We are a community. This is not going to turn into one of those urban-rural conversations again. We are in this, all of us together, and we can come up with some good solutions if we try.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did you have a question, Representative?
I did. It's a question both of you, April, and also of our co-chairs. Some of the questions I've heard is a real need for our committee to look at, and April, you may have some understanding of this, but when we're talking about the kinds of fuel needs and the investment that needs to be made, and we're looking at smaller communities. Of course, Dillingham is the hub, yes, of a number of communities. And I actually was there last year looking at health systems, and hit three other communities, the smaller communities. And those communities were having a hard time then. They had their fuel go up $1 a gallon when I was there, and $1 a pound for mailing services. So they already were under stress. And they were under stress in terms of trying to understand how in the world they could come up with the money. And I think that we need to have, for this committee, some real briefings on what the funding mechanisms are, because smaller communities can't do the kind of bonding, can't come up with the kind of money without there being some kind of larger entity. And April, do you know anything about that particular issue?
Probably personally, no, but that we do have experts who are going to help us come up with some policy papers, who are going to help us wrestle with this and give you as much information as we can possibly do to support you in your deliberations. But I would also like to add, inject into this conversation, that this is not just about individuals. This is about the school. This is about small business. This is about the stores and about the processors. This is about all of the people who have the wastewater facilities out there. If you don't have the fuel to keep your essential services alive, your communities dry up and blow away. And the fact is, we need these. All of the resources, the bounty that Anchorage is built on, is based on these income and revenue streams flowing in from rural Alaska. We have our mines, we have our fishing industry, we have our ferry system, the airports. How will we ever develop natural resources out in rural Alaska if we allow the airports and the port facilities, the people who've invested their lives in living in these communities and maintaining these facilities, to dry up and blow away? And it is getting to that. I've heard many conversations of people saying, how are we going to make it through the winter? And, you know, an associated problem is, where are they going to go? You know, there's no low-income housing in Anchorage. It just doesn't exist.
It's 40%.
Right.
Representative Sarah,
thank you. In response to Representative Cisna and those who have testified so far today, the issue before us are the two bills that the governor has proposed as solutions. And so if we want to consider other things, that's why we're certainly taking those into note now, but we wouldn't want to consider those at the expense of holding the $1,200 appropriation and the power cost equalization without moving those forward into finance. So so we can go forward and consider, but who's focusing on that right now is the Alaska Energy Authority, and we will hear from those individuals next Tuesday when we meet administratively by invitation. So if there's someone else, Representative Cisna, that we're not including, if you could get those to Representative Ledoux's office.
You're safe again.
Representative Cisna.
Thank you. And in this, in response to that comment, this is Community and Regional Affairs. So having been a part of this committee for quite a few years, knowing kind of the dynamics of how in the world these communities can make it, would give us some understanding what individuals are having to deal with in those communities.
Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and truly I'll quit talking because I'm here to listen today. But Steve Hagenson has prepared a district cost factor analysis by region, and he did speak to that at the Alaska State Chamber, but they were in preliminary form, and so I would think that that rough draft should be a little bit more concise now, and hopefully we'll see that from them next Tuesday.
Good. Any other questions for Ms. Ferguson? Well, it looks like you're off the hot seat.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. The next person, and I'm sorry if I'm going to butcher your name, Anathea Veach? Andrea Veach. Sorry, I can't read it.
You know, cuts like this, admin services, $3,000.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify, though. And my name is Andrea Veach. I'm a secretary for the State of Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. My testimony here has nothing to do with my job. And I am here to oppose what I consider the possible indiscriminate squandering of $1.2 billion. I'm all for giving people, I'm all for targeting needs and giving it as it's needed, but I don't think all needs are equal. And it reminds me of when President Bush came into office and there was a surplus and he decided he was going to send a check to everybody, and he did send a check to everybody. A few months later, we had 9/11 with really drastic consequences. We don't really know what's up the road. There might be a surplus now. We don't know what's up the road a bit. We're only experiencing now just the tip of the iceberg of what could become much worse for us in the ways of energy costs. And with competing needs of China and India, that's very likely. So I'm for targeting things, targeting needs, not only for energy, but for Department of Public Safety. We just had some very good editorials in the paper about the budget being cut for the Department of Public Safety by $2.5 million. That's, you know, basically chicken feed, apparently, compared to what we're talking about here. And yet we have the highest number of rates in the nation. We have high rates of domestic violence, child abuse, that sort of thing. This money can be used to help in those endeavors, too. And really my basic point is there are some things that only government can address. Only people like you and like you people who are assembled to decide how are we going to handle these public problems. And those types of things like law enforcement are one of those things. If we can't address these adequately, and if we're so low on the totem pole in these areas, we need to be doing something about that. We cannot go out and be a bunch of vigilantes. So if you're not doing it, who is going to do it? This is a broader spectrum than just energy. And we really don't know where we will go down the road on this piece. And the editorials that I read in the paper, I'm sure you read them too, talking about John Sears and about our rate in murder, manslaughter, rape. Then we have Elise Patokat talking about funding for state retirement system, women's shelters, substance abuse treatment facilities. And, you know, what about the food bank? If people are really needing food, I mean, we need to give them food. And I don't care if they're out in the villages or in Anchorage or where they are. I mean, this needs to be thought about. And a lot of times wealth seems to gather together. I mean, you might get two good wage earners in a family, a husband and wife. It wouldn't be unusual for two of them to be doctors or even lawyers or whatever. So you've got this concentration of wealth, and yet you're giving checks for $1,200 to every single person in the family. And it doesn't make sense. I think it needs to be thought out very well and targeted for the people who are most needy and in the areas that only government can serve.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Representative Salmon.
If you oppose that $1,200, do you have any other solutions other than
Well, thinking about it, you've just had testimony from people in rural communities where there is a dire need, and I believe those needs are real, and those people should be helped. But to give every single person, regardless of their circumstances, in Anchorage, $1,200 per person, I think is ridiculous.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any further questions? Thank you for your testimony.
You're welcome.
The next person is, I think it's David Nelson.
Daryl
Nelson.
Was that Daryl?
Welcome.
Thank you, Chairwoman and committee. I've been testifying on many different issues for many years, and
excuse me, Mr. Nelson, could you tell us whether you're affiliated with any organization, or are you testifying on behalf of yourself?
I'm speaking on my behalf of myself.
All right, thank you.
No problem.
Go ahead.
As far as the $1,200, I think that it is not going to solve the problem. It's not even going to even scratch the surface, because what's going to happen is that if we don't deal with the issue at hand, we're going to be in the same boat next year, and the year after, and the year after that. We ought to put it into doing our own oil wells, and then hiring our own. The state should be hiring their own employees to bring down the cost, like in Venezuela, where the gas is only roughly around 30 cents a gallon. It's because they own the oil wealth. They own the producers. They hire the producers. They're not making any big, the producers not making any big profit. Going back to the $1,200, we could be investing it in three things that I know of. One, making sure that healthcare is a right for all Alaskans. Two, we could be investing it in our own oil wells. And three, we should be investing it in mass transit for the whole state, because if the gases go up, we're seeing more and more people ride MassTransit, which is really great. It gets people off the road and safer driving, leaving it to the professionals, whether it is paratransit drivers, which is also professional drivers, and transit drivers, which is professional drivers. And we need, the state should be investing in our mass transit system as well as our city, and it would also bring down the cost of our local property taxes. Any questions?
Anybody have any questions? Thank you very, very much for coming.
Thank you.
The next person that we will be hearing from is Bonnie Nelson, and Senator Thomas, I want to acknowledge, is online.
Bonnie Nelson.
Yes.
Chigiak, District 16, and I'm talking for myself. And I'm Daryl's mom, and yes, I agree with everything he just said, so let's see if I can add anything. But I think that we are in an emergency crisis throughout the whole state, and we have to think like emergency. And the $1,200 isn't the best management in case of emergency. We do believe in government can do a good job, and it should be with citizen involvement at a more local level. So we think that government should be held accountable in an emergency to target life and death issues first. And life and death issues, like Daryl said, should be a human right. And that does include safety, it does include public transit, and it does include providing medical care for those that are in the most need first. And in the proper order, I do believe that government works best when it's local. So I would like to try, and state and federal government do work best when it's collecting large amounts of money and getting it back to the local. The local, however, should be in charge of and empowered and assisted to manage where that money goes in the best way. Rather than to give it to individuals, it should go to, say, the Matsu Borough or the municipality and some kind of revenue sharing in as to those who need it most. And I think this urban-rural debate needs to, we all need to agree that those that are in the greatest life-threatening situations should get the most care first, and that is our rural. And I would add that when the monitoring costs money, we don't need a windfall to the federal government. People have to pay taxes on these. It's kind of a, that's the stupid waste. Is it going to be another kind of a PFD kind of, you know, thing that just looks good to get people votes? That's just a terrible thing in a time of a crisis. And so I would prefer to think of that money to be used as an investment, like Daryl said. We're still trying to understand the AGEA process, and we think that, you know, we still don't know. We know that we don't trust the producers to control that oil money that belongs to Alaskans. We are Wally Hickel. We are owner state. We own those resources, and so we totally agree with him on that. We don't particularly agree with him on every issue. We don't want it to be in Valdez. We want it to be at Port McKenzie because we think that's a deep water port. So it's like everything gets crazy and it's complicated, and I really, really want to say I appreciate all your work. I know you've been really studying this for a long, long time. There are so many issues, and I want to thank you and Governor Palin. I know everybody's heart is in the right place, and I'm just so pleased that our government, I think, is working so much better like it's supposed to than it certainly has had a bad history in the last a few years ago. So I think all of you are really, I'm really proud to be an Alaskan, and I think you're all doing a very, very good job. I want to put in a plug, like Daryl said, for transit, public transit, because it does get people you know, because of the gas costs, it also saves lives to use public transit money and encourage. So if you put money there, it's going to help. And I think you should include the ferry system, the railroad, and transportation in a much bigger way, as well as planes for the bush. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody have any questions? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Bonnie, I know both you and Daryl. I spoke to you considerably. And I want to say to the committee members that they're both very well informed. They keep up on what's going on. And I think, Bonnie, what I'm getting out of what you were saying there is you feel that it's probably better to take the $1,200, and I know that you and Daryl could probably use that $1,200 as much as anybody in this state.
That's right.
And put it into the state as a whole to help the community as a whole. Is that what?
Yes, but I would like to have the state try to get it in some kind of revenue sharing way so that Matsu can people can have some town meetings and discuss as a group collectively how that money can be best targeted to those most in need.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, the next person would be Paul Kendall. And at this point, I want to ask if there's anybody else who is in the audience who has not spoken or has not signed up who wants to speak, because we're letting people go more than the normal 3 or 4 minutes because there aren't that many people who are signed up. So if there's anybody else who is here in the audience who wants to sign up, please do so. So, Mr. Kendall?
I guess, first of all, my name is Paul, middle initial D, Kendall. I have no conflict of interest. I represent no particular body, or either directly or indirectly. I look for no personal private gain. Before I begin, I want to pass around some pictures to you, if I might. This is a house of the future. It's out of the Proper Science magazine. It's magnificent. It's very hard to get these pictures. It's an all-fuel cell-based house, and it gives you an idea of what the future will look like. I think you'd be very interested to look at some of this data that I'm going to pass around. You can just float it around. I'll be here until the end of the meeting. First, I want to thank you for the opportunity to give testimony today. I'm not sure I know where to start. There are so many things that you want to say, but you can't find a way to sum it all up. And I would beg questions so that you might debrief me or disassemble my many thoughts. I have been involved in energy for a long, long time as somewhat of an activist. It appears to me that there are several encompassing comments I'd like to make. First of all, I don't think we have an energy problem. And let me repeat that, if I might. We really don't have an energy problem. There's plenty of energy there. What we have is a leadership problem with a vision. This leadership could go up to the ANS up there and actually command the wellhead and tell them that we will no longer and can no longer sustain this injustice, this pluck and plundering of our homes. It is our homes that hold us all together, that give us freedoms, that allow us to be individuals, that allow us to form our societies. And in doing that, it allows them to have what they call their free enterprise. Their free enterprise could not exist without our many stable societies. So it isn't that we really have an energy problem, ladies and gentlemen. What we have is a leadership that needs to be collected with a vision, and that's what happens when you come to a society that needs to struggle to be something else, just as you would as a young man and learning about life or in a marriage and what that takes and children birthing. Societies go through these things. Now, having said that, and I don't want to go into that too harshly, but there are other encompassing comments to make. What you have is a perfect storm headed your way. We really don't know what's coming our way. I thought we'd seen this. This would be the fourth time I've witnessed this escapade of moving economies in various directions and collapsing them all in what we call a capital gathering mode or enterprise. But this time, I can't really tell what's happening. The signals are so confusing that we really can't plan on anything. The one thing I think we have learned is this. We will never be a free people until we secure the energy. It is the energy for our single-family homes that allows us to have children, to contemplate the realms of conveyance, of courtesies to each other, and a new society better. Without that energy, along with water and air, we have nothing. So having said that, I'd also like to donate my $1,200 to a cause, should the cause be able to rise to this. I'd like to see those people who don't need the money take one village, say 50 homes, something of that nature, and I'd like to buy them an electrical generation based upon water. I'm done with fossil fuels. I'm gassed out. I'm gassed, period. I'm out of gas, okay? I'm done. I've learned my lesson. As long as another man holds me hostage to purchase from him, I'll never be a free man. And if the leadership won't take me there, and the corporations which this great country created, my forefathers and mothers created these corporations, if they won't take me, then I'll bequeath my freedom to somebody else. And what I'd like to see is that small village be made all electric in the homes. I'm primarily in the residential section. And then they can bring in electric vehicles. And I'd like to see no written laws.
Kendall, I'm going to have to ask you to start wrapping up. We've had about 10 more people sign up for their testimony, and
sure,
we're not going to get to everybody if it goes
sure
beyond 3 minutes per person.
Well, and I thank you. And here's which brings me to another problem. There is so much to convey to you. I mean, the hydroelectric capacity of this country, this great state of Alaska, the electric vehicles that are coming online in 2010 and plug-ins and solid electrics are just amazing. There are over 50 hydrogen correlated vehicles going to break next year and the year after. So many things to convey that we can get through this. Actually, this portends of a great, great time for Alaska if we don't get ambushed.
I'm really going to have to ask
sure
you to wrap up.
All right. And I would say this, that one of the problems I have seen, which continues to be an insurmountable problem from what I can tell, is that we no longer have the ability as a society to be able to correlate our time. In my younger day, in my days, when I would listen to my relatives around the table, they used to be able to talk in length. There was never a hurried moment. There was never a punishing moment if you tried to have long dialogues. We have missed that as a society. It needs to come back. But I thank you for the time that you've allocated me, and I hope I didn't take from somebody else's. And if there's any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Kendall? Well, thank you very much for coming.
Sure.
Next person is Margaret Manisoff.
Good afternoon. I'm Margaret Manisoff. I'm here on behalf of Alaska Conservation Solutions. I'm an associate of Deborah Williams, and I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to speak with you. I am also here to submit for the record three analytical papers, and I have 7 copies of these packets.
All right. When the committee aide comes back, you can just give those to her,
absolutely,
all right? Thank you.
Absolutely. They deal with the following 3 topics. Number 1, why we believe a resource rebate is not in the state's best interest. Secondly, why motor fuel taxes should not be suspended. And, of course, that's not the issue we're talking about today. And third and most importantly, we present some alternative approaches to addressing Alaska's energy needs in these extraordinary difficult times. So, being very cognizant of the time restraints, I'd like to just quickly highlight some of the most compelling reasons we believe that the $1,200 rebate is not a good idea. First of all, the resource rebate program will be politically difficult, if not impossible, to end, so long as energy prices remain high, and all indications are that they will remain high. Number 2, because the rebates would be subject to federal taxation, a significant proportion, 10% to 35% of that rebate money will just go to the federal government, not to Alaskans. Number 3, the program is not targeted towards those most in need, nor is there any requirement that the rebate money be spent on energy expenses. Number 4, Alaskans will be receiving their permanent fund dividend checks in the fall and logically could apply some of this income to their energy expenditures, especially since the amount is expected to increase and it will be arriving before the winter. The distribution of the 2 state checks, the PFD and the proposed resource rebate check, within a short period of time could also have undesirable social consequences. And by that I mean there's a possibility that it could attract people whose primary motivation is not to become Alaskans, but rather just to get what they perceive to be a government handout. Similarly, the rebate will be negatively perceived in Washington, D.C. If Alaska is perceived as being awash in money and just giving it all away, this could have serious expensive consequences for the state in terms of the amount of federal funds Congress is willing to funnel to Alaska. In addition, we believe that common resources should be invested for the common good. For logical, civic, and moral reasons, the state surplus should be invested in community projects rather than as a windfall bonus to individuals. Most importantly, however, we believe that there are better ways to address the critical problem of soaring energy costs in our state. And towards that end, I draw your attention to the document which you will receive, which is entitled the Energy Relief Savings and Efficiency Plan, which provides suggestions for energy conservation and energy efficiency solutions that will benefit Alaskans both now and for decades to come. With regards to the appropriation bill, and again, I will be brief, I would like to respectfully point out that Governor Palin has actively sought out help in refining and improving her energy cost relief proposal. She's quoted in the Juneau Empire on June 22nd as saying, quote, lawmakers will be expected to provide better remedies, better solutions, unquote. We all know that Alaska is at a critical fork in the road. We have two choices. We can implement a thoughtful, comprehensive strategy that has both immediate and long-term benefits, or we can simply apply aspirins and Band-Aids that alleviate and mask symptoms but do little, if anything, to treat the underlying disease. If the state simply subsidizes fossil fuel consumption by all Alaskans, this will increase our dependence on foreign supplies, create inequities, fail to address the root causes of the problem, and establish a massive subsidy that would be virtually impossible to undo in the future. Fortunately, however, there exist numerous strategies that can provide immediate, mid, and long-term relief to high energy prices and simultaneously reduce our demand on fossil fuels. This is a responsible path to the future. If the state is prepared to spend over $800 million rather than doing that through $1,200 rebate checks, we can make smart, equitable, long-lasting investments that will benefit the state for years to come, lower our carbon footprint, make us a model for others, and provide critical relief to people throughout the state, especially those most in need. In conclusion, we at Alaska Conservation Solutions are committed to helping find the best ways to address soaring energy costs in our state. I respectfully urge you to incorporate the proposals in our Energy Relief Savings and Efficiency Plan into your dialogue as you grapple with the very serious energy issues facing all Alaskans. Thank you very much for all your hard work and also for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And what would you like me to do with this?
And the next person giving testimony is Mary Ann Peace.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Ann Peace, and I'm working with Bristol Bay Native Corporation on behalf of energy-related issues. And I'm here today to speak in specific on House Bill 4002 and House Bill 4003. As winter approaches, Alaskans statewide are facing the economically uncomfortable prospect of a winter with unprecedented costs for energy, particularly for heating their homes and businesses. But just last week, on Monday, I was out in Dillingham for an energy summit where many of the local villages got together and discussed the impending crisis. We heard from elders, we heard from leaders in the community, we heard from the schools, we heard from the clinics, and what we heard was a consistent message. We have the last barge in September. The costs are at an unprecedented high, and we see people leaving. That's a message that I never face here in Anchorage. When I go to the pump and I fill up my SUV with gas, I don't think twice about that. I think the state needs immediate and some sort of measure to help these folks in a timely and expeditious manner. The permanent fund dividend check is going to be too late. We need something now. Nowhere is that impact greater than in Western Alaska, where all communities are dependent on local electric and fuel sources that are burdened not only by the high cost of the product, but also by the enormous added transportation costs. On behalf of those communities, I urge you to pass House Bill 4002 and 4003 in an expeditious manner to provide a small measure of assistance to rural residents faced with the economic dilemma of buying energy or other necessities. We all know that Alaska has the highest gasoline price, and there's no great surprise that it gets that marker because of the costs in rural Alaska. That same distinction applies to diesel prices, home heating oil, and electricity. Barges to many of the communities in Bristol Bay will be ending mid-September. I've had discussions with Crowley. I've had discussions with Delta Western. We're looking at the costs, and they are escalating. They're about 620 into the Dillingham region now. And when I asked what that price would be for the September delivery, there's no real clue on what they are, but they do appear to be tracking what our price of oil is doing. What we have here, and I don't want to make any ifs, ands, or buts about it, is a very short-term Band-Aid on a very large wound that needs much more serious attention. As part of the energy relief, I would urge you to try to come up with a more comprehensive and long-term solution to rural energy costs. There are economies of scale associated with energy production and distribution, but Alaska's energy costs, especially in rural areas, are disproportionate to the rest of the country. We have energy reserves and potential in state, developed and undeveloped, yet economic activity in the state is hamstrung by these high energy costs. Our state has tons of money thanks to record high oil prices, but many of her citizens are bleeding economically for the same exact reason. We need a concerted effort to promote small-scale, self-sustaining energy options in rural areas. And we've seen that. We were out there in Dillingham. We saw the folks putting up their own wind turbines. You know, it's not a foregone conclusion that they're going to use this money just to continue the fossil fuel epidemic. I mean, there's ingenious options that they're utilizing. They're putting in wood-burning stoves. They're putting in wind power. They're looking at some in-stream hydro. So all of these are truly opportunities that we may be affording some of these people to get off of fossil fuels. While energy options are a function of economics and scale, it is not just the small villages that are in dire straits as a result of enormous energy costs. Regional centers such as Dillingham, Bethel, and Nome are facing the same crises as their outlying villages. Without viable alternatives to the present situation, whole regions of the state will cease to function economically. Renewable energy solutions will need to play a strategic part of the energy solution, but many of these projects will take years to implement, and we already have communities that are greatly impacted. The short-term solution is definitely improved by House Bill 4002 and 3. We need to invest in infrastructure and mandate a renewable mix with fossil fuel for our electric utilities, a strategy that should be part of the overall energy plan for our state. Alternatives may take the form of wind, hydro, maybe even propane. But the key message is that the current reliance on fuel oil must be diversified. Your assistance and leadership is needed now on this issue, and it's critical to the economic survival of much of rural Alaska. And thank you very much for your time and attention. And I do have some of those calculations on home heating oil equivalents and PCE, and I'll give them to you even though you're not taking that up today.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, the next person in our audience for testimony is Ray Ward.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman, Committee. My name is Ray Ward, and I'm testifying here on my behalf as an Alaskan resident. I think the intent of House Bills 4002, 4003 is very good. And must I inject at this point, as a taxpaying Alaskan, I'm very pleased and very happy to see that finally we have a governor who is guiding our state, its economy, in essential, very important areas to produce the overall most effective care and future of our state and its people. And I also want to thank you, the committee, and our state legislature for working with Governor Palin. Governor Palin is accomplishing many essential things for our state that so many governors before her has failed to do. Addressing House Bill 4002-4003, I think it's a good idea. The intent is good. But I think there's some loopholes that need to be corrected. For example, I just briefly perused the draft here, and it calls for giving $1,200 to every person in the state of Alaska. That includes minors. Now, I don't want to support or advocate any type of discrimination in any area. Maybe some people say, well, if you say the children can't get this money or not entitled to this money, you discriminated against minors. No, that's not my point. But I think that this money, this proposed energy rebate, should be given, allocated to the areas and the people where it is needed most. There's been much discussion about the dire need of assistance in the rural. There's also dire need of individuals in the urban areas. For example, like an individual myself, I'm a head of household, I'm alone, and I'm unable to accept suitable employment that would make me self-sufficient to be able to pay my utility bills because of a chronic debilitating visual condition that I developed 37 months ago. This condition has enabled me not to be able to accept suitable employment so I can be self-sufficient. Programs such as House Bill 4-2 and 3 would help individuals such as myself to be able to pay their utility bills, be able to pay their rent, be able to help the people in the rural to pay their fuel costs. And I don't think that giving $1,200 to a minor that does not have the responsibility of maintaining a household, I don't think is very useful of our financial resources. If you're going to give it to individuals, I think you're going to help individuals that are in need, in two ways. One, by channeling this money into our energy assistance programs to enhance the existing energy assistance programs that you have already. So weatherization, our temporary public assistance, our heating cost assistance, that way. And number two, if you're going to give it to an individual, make sure that individual, in order to be eligible, must be the head of a household, or if they live alone, must show that they are in need of this assistance in order to be able to survive as a person in their home by being able to pay the rent, the utility bills. So I think that's some loopholes. Like I said, the intent is good. And in closing, I again want to thank you, the committee, and Governor Palin, for your outlook and your guidance and your direction of what you think is best for Alaska's people and its economy. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Ward? All right. Thank you very much for coming. The next person is Jody Kars.
Hello. My name is Jody Kars. I'm the Public Transportation Director for the Municipality of Anchorage, but I am coming here to talk as myself with 24 years of transit experience. I have some concerns on House Bill 4002 and 4003 in that I'm not really sure that these bills will actually enact change. I think what we need within the state are ways to look at our energy use, make our systems well enough so people can change their transportation patterns. I think we need long and short-term strategies as far as handling the energy issue. Representative Salmon had said, what are the solutions and what are we going to do beyond this year? I'd like to throw up a couple of solutions for you. We operate a vanpool program within the municipality. It takes 600 people a day, which is about 60,000 miles that we reduce per day in our Vanpool program, people commuting from the Mat-Su Valley into Anchorage. We have a waiting list of 700 people. In order to double our Vanpool fleet, it would cost about $1.7 million. That, again, would at that amount, we would be reducing travel for people by who are in Vanpools by 120,000 miles a day. I'd also like to point out that our public transportation system is seeing a 10% increase in ridership. We have buses that need to be replaced. Buses statewide need to be replaced. And public transportation is a very important component of energy relief. I would like to see support for a transit trust fund, funding that could be put into transit systems statewide that are a little more guaranteed. For many years, our funding has fluctuated based on a number of factors. I think it would be very helpful statewide for all the systems to know that there is a dedicated source, or there is a growth source for funds. And this is not just an Anchorage issue. It again, is a statewide issue. Finally, I would like to talk about perhaps funding for transit fuel. Every time that fuel tank pulls up to our parking lot, I lose a little bit of, or I get a few gray hairs as I'm thinking of what it's going to cost us, and all the transit systems are feeling that pinch as well. So I guess I would like to throw up some solutions to HB 4002 and 3 that would again give some long-term impacts. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. The next person that I've got listed for testimony is Lisa Michael, but then it says no. Lisa, do you want to testify?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sarah Scanlon?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Chair Ledoux and members of the committee, good to see you all again. And thank you, by the way, for your hard work that you all are doing, spending all the time that you are, not just on what some are referring to as a short-term fix with the HB 4002 and 4003, but also the long-term stuff that you're working on. I am the deputy director for RuralCAP, and as you know, RuralCAP is a statewide organization that's been around for over 40 years. We serve 71 communities, have 700 employees on our payroll year-round. Much of our work is in rural Alaska, although we do also provide services to folks in Anchorage, Juneau, in Sterling for self-help housing. But our clientele and customers are low-income Alaskans who we provide services to have them be able to pull themselves up by the bootstraps and become self-sufficient. I appreciate the comments that we've heard already from the folks that have testified in terms of folks like Bristol Bay, who are working on an energy plan and talking about the bigger picture and how all of these pieces come together. And unfortunately, right now, Alaska is in a crisis. And rural Alaska, our economic engine, is in tough times right now. And I know in the coming days and weeks you're going to hear lots and lots of data and statistics on that. Just two or three that I'd like to share with you. Your State Department of Commerce and Economic Development expects the price of heating fuel in remote Alaska villages to rise 30% to 50% this winter. In addition, ICER's recent report speaks to Alaska rural communities spending about 41% of their income on home energy use, while the people living in Anchorage are spending about 4%. And then the somewhat controversial program, Venezuela program, may not serve rural Alaska this year, so that's another huge hit to folks' pocketbooks in trying to provide fuel for their families this winter. And as you will hear, too, folks, not just in rural Alaska, we know it's happening in urban Alaska, too, as several of the people before have testified. People are having to make a choice between buying fuel, food, gas, or paying electricity bills. And it's real. It's not it's not just something people are making up the data and numbers are there to support it. So RuralCAP wholeheartedly supports these two bills. While it may seem to some to be a short-term fix, it is real to help those families and communities out there be able to provide for their families in the coming weeks as the fuel barges start coming in. And as you know, the PCE program for years has been a mainstay in allowing people to have the benefits that all Alaskans should enjoy. I just again want to thank you for the tough work that you've been charged with, for the good work that you're doing in developing an energy bill, long-term and short-term. I know it's something that's been on your plate for many, many years. And with this crisis, I think it will push all of us to work together and to develop that energy plan that we all want so that we don't have to be up here every year speaking to you about this crisis that's going on. And again, just wish you success in your in the outcomes and work ahead of you, and all the best. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thanks very much. So I've got Kathy Clements listed, but that's no for testimony. Is that correct? Okay. Then the next person is Sally Speaker.
Hello. I'm Sally Speaker. I work at UAA, and I'm also serve on the Public Transit Advisory Board for the Municipality of Anchorage, but I'm representing myself. I'm also a bicycle rider and a people mover rider, and this afternoon when I took the bus downtown, I stood on the bus with 10 other people, which means the bus was totally, completely full. So there's a need there, and it's actually there's a demand there. I'd like to thank you and the governor for looking for solutions for Alaskans. I would hate to be in your job to try to decide what's going to be best. But I'm also asking to look at solutions that are sustainable. Look at renewable fuels, wind power, and coordinated public transportation around the state. I've lived in rural Alaska as well. And I know that when I lived in Nome, for instance, most people didn't own cars, but there were little vans that went around, and everybody shared those. And it's a solution, I think, that's more sustainable than everybody putting fuel into a vehicle that they power individually. We have the opportunity to lead the nation. We have the resources to really look at alternatives and plan for long-term solutions to both solve our heating and electrical needs and also our transportation needs. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you. And I've got a Mark Fish listed, but again, that's no for testimony. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. So we've got two more people from, no, I'm sorry, I've missed Pat Luby. Excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. My name is Pat Luby. I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP. We have not taken a position either in support or opposition to these bills. Part of it is because we're not sure what they are. And we're not sure if this is related to energy cost or if it's simply a second PFD based on the state's income from our resources. If it is related to energy cost, what we'd like to propose is a couple items for you to consider. It's a lot of money. Should we be investing a significant amount of these available dollars to determine ways to lower future energy costs and usage, for example, alternative energy research and development, as well as mass transit? Anchorage has some of the lowest energy costs. Fairbanks had a 13% increase in just 1 year based on the ICER study. The Bush Alaska situation, as you well know, is outrageous compared to what most of us are paying for energy. Should all citizens receive the same rebate, or should the money be allocated based on who has the highest cost? Should the rebate be given based on households or the number of people in a household? For example, if you have a single older widowed woman living in a house, right next to her is a retired couple, their energy costs are going to be pretty much the same if it's similar housing. Should one household get twice as much as the single person living in the house? We don't think so, if it's based on households. But also, the state will never, we're going through a good period now, but the state will never have as much money as we would like to have. You'll never be able to do all the things that you would like to do for the citizens of this state. With considering that we will always have some limited resources, we would suggest that you may want to look at basing whatever activity goes on in terms of a rebate based on people's need, their income status. And those of us who may not need it as much as some others, whether it's because of income or because of higher energy costs.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Faircloth?
Madam Chair, it's not a question, it's a statement, but just for the record, we don't typically answer questions that are put to us, but it is a bit confusing. And at our presentation, this is a resource rebate, and because of Alaska's state constitution, in support of that, the governor is suggesting that should go equally to all residents. And how it was described to us last week from the administration, and certainly please speak to them and don't think that I'm 100% correct here, but they gave an example of a hurricane and Rita and Katrina hitting the coast, and that energy crisis is hitting the state of Alaska as well as our nation. So it's a point, as another person testified earlier, a perfect storm. And that storm is causing Alaska to look and see if, as a state, we should empower our citizens through a resource rebate, an opportunity to use those resources and share those resources. So it was originally spoken about as an energy rebate, but the energy portion of it is in response to a crisis that the governor and the administration is seeing in our state and across the nation. And if we have the resources, then how would we get them to our community members? And that would be done through a resource rebate. But I understand what you said. I just wanted to put on the record that this committee, too, at our last meeting, was asking those same questions. And so that's the response we've received. And there have been other questions from the committee along those lines to try to meet the constitutionality of Alaska's constitution, as well as the critical needs that we see in urban communities and rural communities.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Sisman.
Well, to follow up that discussion, I think that Co-Chair Faircloth is very correct in what the administration said. But I think, Pat, the thing that I'm looking for as a committee member is to get a feeling from the people that we listen to exactly, because the answer that the administration gave us to me was confusing. And I'm looking for what people think we need it to look like. What kind of benefit do the people of the states want from their state representatives?
Through the co-chair, Representative Sista, and I think that's what the governor said when she transmitted this to Speaker Harris. She's looking for your best thinking about this, and all of us are, and we're relying on you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further questions for Mr. Luby? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam.
Looks like we have two more people testifying from here in Anchorage, and then we'll go on to the LIO offices. First is Diane Holmes.
Thank you. I'm Diane Holmes, and we have an incredibly unique opportunity to be a real leader with this oil windfall for developing really long-term solutions for this energy crisis. We have funds to construct renewable energy facilities across the state, wind, tidal power, you name it, geothermal. We need to be doing this. But in addition, we can do something immediately to benefit our towns by creating a large endowment for transportation options like mass transit and commuter rail. And this isn't just for South Central. This is for all over.
I'm sorry, Ms. Holmes, are you affiliated with anybody, or are you testifying on your own behalf?
Just me.
Thank you.
Go ahead. The time has come for better options than just paving our way out of energy crisis. To help our towns and our villages, we need to consider this. Don't rescind the gas tax. Use it to support transportation options, such as the mass transit and commuter rail across the state. Do not give individuals the energy credit check. Give the funds to electric, oil, and natural gas companies to reduce our heating and electric bills, because if you give it only to individuals, you are not benefiting businesses, schools, health clinics, fire departments, or anyone else. Those entities still have a lot of needs, and yet you are thinking of only giving it to individuals. That is not equitable. But if you do give it to individuals, don't just use the PFD. My neighbor does not get it for philosophical reasons, but that person drives and votes. The best long-term solutions would be for, like I said, use it for wind, solar, geothermal. We have the ability to do so much. We already don't have to do too much research on some of those. We can put them in place almost tomorrow. But we could be the leader. Instead of selling our oil and gas, we could be selling our research that we've done on, say, tidal and wave power. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? All right. And the final person here from Anchorage is Tom Lakosh.
My name is Tom Lakosh. My phone number is on there. I'm an Anchorage resident and suffer a disability here. And although it may not affect me at
first, can you say who you represent? Are you representing yourself?
No affiliation.
Thank you.
Being one who has had to struggle through some of the assistance for the disabled programs, I'm well aware that there may be several instances where your generosity may in fact backfire and cost the state much more than it intends to expend for its purpose. This is not the proper mechanism. The rebate, resource rebate, is not the proper mechanism at all to help people who are in dire straits due to energy costs. And to some extent, the position of the administration, as I saw in the hearing, the prior hearing, was quite frustrating to understand on behalf of the committee members and most especially the co-chairs, in that there was no rationale that matched the language of the bill to the stated purpose and intent. If you're trying to help people who are suffering from energy costs, you don't give $1,200 to somebody with a fleet of Hummers. You're rewarding the people who created the crisis. And if it's recognized there's a crisis, there may be people that will have their homes freeze solid, all of the plumbing freeze solid, and will have to sleep in sleeping bags because they can't afford the fuel in rural communities. And that is an emergent need that should be funded through a extension of the existing adult public assistance and energy assistance programs that you already have in effect. And the fact that you're creating a new bureaucracy to try and give away this money that will cost a half million dollars, well, that's another 800 people you could fund right there. And it through existing programs for the same amount. And if they're truly trying to help people who were hurt by this, then you could cut you could say, okay, median, if that was the only purpose and that was the only mechanism, you could say median income and double it for those below, because those would be more likely to have been hurt, like in Katrina, the example they gave. And they specifically said people who are hurt. That was supposed to be the intent. But there's no correlation between giving money away to everyone and to solve a problem of people getting hurt by the energy costs today. And so I think that there are people that are in dire need of fuel that in without expensive thousands of dollars to insulate their homes. And even if you insulated their homes, they still might not have money to go buy the fuel to heat it. So there is that emergency need that has to be dealt with right away, and that should be dealt with through existing programs that you can better fund and create a extension, call it a one-time extension for an emergency need, because in looking at some of those programs, they were designed to have limitations, income limitations and outlay limitations. And you might have to look at that as a special needs program and that supplements prior subsidies because of the disparity and inability of those programs to keep up with the price of oil. And so you have to recognize that here as a special case that is not applicable elsewhere or is exacerbated in Alaska. So I think that the stated intent of the administration was worthy. The legislation was poorly written and should be rejected. The tax suspension should be voted down. Like I said, you don't pay somebody who went out and bought Hummers for doing a disservice to the entire community. And so my time has expired. I'd be willing to accept any questions. I would hope somebody would ask me about the negative impact to people receiving assistance.
Questions?
Madam Chair, I think we just got asked a question to ask you a question, and I think I will take this advantage if you will accept it, Tom. You and I did speak about this before, and I had mentioned that the bill, as I understand it, does have provisions in it to cover and make sure that we don't have any disadvantages to people in terms of the amount of money. And I think this was made reference to in another person who testified today, concerned about seniors and in some of the senior programs being concerned about people making too much money. And my understanding is the bill does take provision for that, but you were concerned about that.
Right, and I did a little more research, and it probably wouldn't affect me personally given my disability status, but the way I understand it is that this is a one-time funding of that will allocate and expend totally, and the hold harmless provisions are only for 4 months, so it's very possible that the harm or the loss of benefits that might happen to somebody who accepts this, A, could be extended past 4 months, and they may not find out in time to be able to take advantage of the provision because there's no more money left in the fund. And why you would want to pay, say if somebody got a subsidy of $500 a month and that they lost for 6 months, they would only be able to at best get 4 months back. And the state would have to pay, you know, an extra $2,000. Why wouldn't you just fund that mechanism that gave them that subsidy in the first place, the APA in the first place? Because then you wouldn't have to pay for the whole harmless cost. If you funded it through AHFC or through adult public assistance or through your energy assistance programs directly, that wouldn't count as income for those people. You wouldn't have to hold them harmless for a loss. By putting in a hold harmless cause, you increase the burden to the fund, and you're likely going to create a situation where the money isn't there to pay the hold harmless clause because you sent out the checks too quickly and there was nothing left. There wasn't a reserve left to pay for the hold harmless. Hold harmless may not extend to the full harm that is created. Why it's so silly to cost yourself more money when all you had to do was fund it through that aid program in the first place.
Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I certainly, Tom, would be happy to follow up on this to look at if there are programs that that we can identify. And I think it probably is possible to see if there are any remedies. What I do suspect, and probably there's others on the committee that could answer this even better than myself, but my suspicion is that adding to these other programs and trying to think that all through would add so much time to this and so much financial addition to the costs. And I think what we all want to do is make sure we're putting the maximum amount of money in the communities, either through individuals' hands or through the programs that that will really solve the problem in the end.
I understand the timeliness here, and unfortunately, you know, I don't know this well enough. I would, if I was on the committee, I would call the head of AHFC in, the adult public assistance in, and the energy assistance program directors in, and say, you know, how can we fund, what can we write here to fund your programs and have a supplemental funding of your programs immediately, write it up and do it. Because it's quite obvious that if you don't put a needs factor in here, there are people that will be hurt that should have been garnered the benefit of the intent of the administrative stated intent. And I would say, you know, hold some of it back for long-term solutions for those who really need it. You can now get ceramic dust that you can paint on the inside of a house and insulate it with just painting. There are simple solutions to cutting energy bills, you know, that aren't real, real expensive and real, real long-term, and you should probably think about, you know, bumping up those options in addition to the immediate need to keep people's houses from freezing solid and people from getting hypothermia and getting sick this winter. I understand this, but there's already a mechanism to do that. You should spend another week and get those department heads in here to tell you exactly what language they need to provide supplemental funding. Thank you.
Tom, I just wanted to let you know and let the rest of the audience know that on Tuesday, that's July 22nd, we're going to be continuing hearings on this bill, and at those hearings, we are going to have further testimony by the Department of Revenue, Department of Law, Alaska Energy Authority, and the Department of Health and Social Services.
AHFC, I would add in there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I think that finishes the Anchorage testimony. So now we're going to go online. And the first person, and I know the folks online have been waiting quite a while, so we'll go to Jeff Steffens from Kodiak. And Jeff, please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Representative Ledoux. My name is Jeff Steven. I am offering my comments today both as a private citizen and also on behalf of the United Fishermen's Marketing Association, which is a trade association that represents commercial harvesters that fish in the Gulf of Alaska and the Bering Sea, Aleutian Island. And I won't make an effort to differentiate my comments and assign one to my personal comments or my association comments. They're fairly benign, and if somebody wants to question me on that later, that's perfectly fine, and I'll try to differentiate those. I'd like to first thank you, Representative Ledoux, and Representative Faircloth, and members of the Community Regional Affairs Committee for holding these hearings on HB 202 and 2003, and for introducing these pieces of legislation. And on behalf of UFMA and myself, we support both these pieces of legislation pretty much as they are offered. We support the objectives that Governor Palin has offered in her transmittal letter and the rationale that supports that, and also the objectives and the rationale that, so far at least, the legislature has offered for this legislation. And we also want to go on record as not only supporting the rebate, but also the power cost equalization. We believe that the equal distribution to all residents in the context of surplus revenues from resource extraction is the right way to go here, and that is to do it any other way wouldn't be right, and I don't think you it's not within the context of that spending a portion of the excess revenues from those resources. The fishing industry, as you know, will be mainly assisted through the motor fuel tax suspension that is proposed in HB 404. This is not a tremendous amount of money, but yet it is very important. We have an immediate need and crisis, and these monies will make the difference. Fishing industry processors, processing employees, harvesters, and their crew people are families and have families, and there is a very, as you well know, there's a very significant issue that is represented by this trend in fuel prices, not only the current prices, but what we will expect in the next 12 months. And it is very impacting to fuel-intensive industries and to those communities that basically rely on and are supported by these fuel-intensive industries. And, of course, the fishing industry is very fuel-intensive. And so the coastal communities like Kodiak and other areas are very much impacted, as are places like Anchorage. And by the way, we believe that the distribution should be made equally to the rural areas and to the the urban areas as well at this point, given the context of this legislation. There's other ways to address alternative energy or energy conservation and incentives and energy conservation initiatives. But I think in the context of this bill and where the money's coming from, it is. So anyhow, we understand that. We support it. I would like to say I'm a member of the school board here in Kodiak. I'm not speaking on behalf of them, but I would like to offer some comments that I have that are based in my knowledge. We have seven rural schools here in Kodiak. We have four town elementaries, one town high school, one town middle school, and as I said, seven rural schools, village schools. And you heard earlier today that I heard the comment that there may be some migration out of the villages because of these fuel prices. And I think that is a real problem that you're going to have to face, or that we are going to have to face. And in some of these rural villages, we've got 12 and 14 students, and if there's one family that leaves with two or three kids because of the fact of the fuel prices, we're going to be shutting down schools. And these rural communities on Kodiak, as well as Kodiak and as well as Anchorage, these families, these households, these individuals need some assistance. This is a small amount. It might make the difference. It's a serious need. And there's a lot of unanticipated consequences.
Sir, I'm going to have to ask you to begin wrapping up.
Okay, I'll conclude with that, Representative Ledoux. Thank you for letting me go over, and thank the committee for holding this hearing and for introducing and for promoting the legislation or putting it out for discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. All right, we'll go now to Cordova, and we have to begin with Rochelle Vandenbroek.
Hi, sorry, while we saw that background noise. My name is Rochelle Vandenbroek, and I am testifying on behalf of Kodiak District Fishermen United. I'm the executive director, and also on behalf of myself as a citizen of the community of Cordova. There are over 32,000 fishermen in the state of Alaska, and small business owners rely on fuel to do their jobs. These high fuel prices are crippling the fishing industry and subsequently crippling our small rural communities. And on a personal note, this has been a particularly cold summer for us here in Cordova, and many of the residents in our community have been having to heat their homes during the summer months, which is unusual for us here. So we're sort of being hit twice by this high cost, with having to heat our homes in summer, and then looking towards the winter where we're going to be facing extraordinary costs probably in the, around $1,000 a month to heat most of the homes here. Rural communities struggle to upgrade their homes in an energy-efficient manner because we're struggling to get materials and supplies into these small communities where transportation costs are so high. That said, I do feel that this bill should stay the way it is, and I'm in support, fully in support of both of these bills, that it should be awarded on an individual basis, not per household, but for the individual, because even though there may be, you know, two or three or four members in a household or more, there are extra costs, and the high cost of fuel impacts food prices and transportation and clothing and any other kinds of materials. So that resource relief really will help families meet the costs this winter and the years beyond. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. The next person from Cordova is Deborah Timmerman.
Thank you. I approve the House bill, both of them. I am speaking for myself, and I strongly believe that we need to have this help with all of the increases in fuel. Last month, I just got 50 gallons, and the cost was more than I normally paid last winter. I'm just really afraid to see the cost. And so many people are leaving. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much. And the final person from Cordova is Keith Vandenbroek.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak here. Keith Vandenbroek. I'm speaking on behalf of myself as a resident of Cordova. I guess I'd like to say I don't think you're going to find too many rural residents in Alaska who aren't going to be in support of getting some financial assistance to help us get through the winter here. As a lot of people have pointed out before, it's a Band-Aid. It's temporary. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think a lot of people are going to need the assistance to get through this winter. It's going to be a tough one. It's been a tough summer, and it's going to be a tough winter. So the only thing I would suggest is that when you're handing out this money, it needs to be handed out maybe with a level of education, because, you know, best-case scenario, people are going to receive the money and hand it straight over to the oil company. Worst-case scenario, people are going to go to the liquor store with it. And I think it would be better spent with, you know, people making energy improvements to their homes and doing things that are going to reduce their dependence on oil in the future when this money's gone. Because, you know, if I get $1,200 each for the three members of my household, it'll get us through 6 months. And that'll be great, because it's six more months that we can afford to stay in Cordova. But, you know, what happens after that? So, you know, myself personally, if I get this money, I'm going to use it to replace windows and replace siding and make other energy improvements to my home. And I'd like to see a lot of other people do the same sort of thing. So, you know, included with that check in the mail, I think you should be sending out information packets where people can seek information on how they can replace some of their oil-thirsty appliances and make improvements to their homes so they don't have that oil dependence in the future. That's about all I've got. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Well, thank you very much. Okay, we will now go to Toke, and we've got Gary Hay in Toke.
Hi, my name's Gary Hay. I'm a resident of Toke, and I'd like to thank the committee for this opportunity to testify on these two bills. And I'd just like to make a comment about...
Gary, before you go any further, are you representing yourself, or are you affiliated with any organization?
I'm just affiliated with the other 670,000 citizens of the state of Alaska.
Thank you.
I was listening to the comments earlier, and I would say that the Hummer analogy is really not correct. If you drive a 12-year-old Suburban that you're trying to keep together, It gets just as bad a gas mileage as that Hummer does. And there really is an energy crisis out here outside of the Anchorage area. I spent the first 5 years of my Alaska experience in Anchorage, and the last 10 have been here in Tok. And this is a crisis that is affecting blue-collar, white-collar workers, state employees, self-employed people, restaurant owners, gas station owners, grocery store owners. The cost increase has gone through our entire economy, and our wages have not kept up at all. Our home-delivered cost for diesel fuel has gone up 500% in 6 years, and I dare say my wages have gone up 20% in 6 years. The problem is that people are leaving. People are leaving the state. They are taking off. They are going to places where the kilowatt hour cost is 8 cents or 12 cents a kilowatt hour. And in some cases, that means moving to Anchorage. Rents, if your rent includes heat, those rents are going up so high people can't afford to rent if they're not homeowners. The legislature passed the weatherization program, which is a great step in the right direction. But we emailed all five of the Fairbanks energy raters. Two of them actually responded, and one said that he actually would be willing to travel to Tok if we could get enough people together, but it would be October 7th would be the earliest date that he could come down here to help us. So all our improvements that we're going to make out of pocket, and we're not going to be able to take advantage of the state's program for weatherization. I think that the idea of an energy rebate, House Bill 4002, is a great idea. I think that the sooner it gets out to the population, the sooner we can help pay off our fuel bills from last year, because our fuel distributors won't pay, give us any more fuel till we pay off last year's bills, and those fuel distributors are on the verge of bankruptcy themselves from carrying so much people's accounts way past the normal time that it would be that you would be having it paid off. People are getting notices in their invoices from the fuel company that there is no more new fuel until you pay the old fuel bill off. So as far as 4002 goes, for rural and bush Alaska, we're all in favor of it. I think most people are responsible and will spend the money to pay off last year's fuel bills or to put money aside for this year's fuel bills. As far as...
Gary, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up. Begin wrapping it up. Thank you.
Okay. For the power cost equalization, I would like to propose a subsistence power program where the state decides a subsistence amount of monthly power, whether it's 800, 1,000, or 1,200 kilowatt hours, and then determine a statewide kilowatt hour cost. And then all utility customers would get the subsistence amount of electricity at the subsidized cost. This would not interfere with people going over an income level for certain other benefit programs, and this would not be treated as income, and it still would encourage conservation, because once you went over the subsistence amount, 800 or 1,000 kilowatt hours a month, you would pay the local rate. And that's my 2 cents. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. We are now going to go to individual online sites. The first person is Sheila Ho.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Sheila Ho, and I'm in District 20, and I'm housebound. So I asked to testify this way. Anna Fairclough knows who I am. I'm very much concerned that the...
Sheila, could I interrupt you for a moment? And can you tell us if you are affiliated with any corporation or anything like that?
I am just a senior citizen. I'm over 60, and so is my husband.
Thank you.
We have a limited income, and yes, the money would come in handy, but I, over the last 2 years, have been able to cut my power bill here in Anchorage by $200 a month by just making improvements to our home by using our current dividend checks, by replacing windows and doing insulation and putting in newer appliances that are energy efficient. And this proved to be very advantageous to us here in Anchorage. But the people in the bushes condition is so much more critical, because when those barges sail from Seattle, that sets their price for the winter. And they will not survive, and it will kill the villages. So we need to have it a needs basis. Some of us can survive by using good common sense, but the villages need help now, before the snow comes, before the barges can't get to them anymore. And we need to move them next summer off the oil and onto sustainability, if at all possible. And thank you for, it was wonderful to hear everybody's comments throughout the state this afternoon. If I can be of any help, there is a project online right now that's in the Hebrides Island that's totally sustainable, and they're at our latitude, which means they have no energy costs, they're off the grid, and they're living in homes just like ours.
Thank you. Representative Fairclough?
Madam Chair, I appreciate the latitude. Sheila, if you were here, I'd get a smile or a hug, so I just wanted to say thank you for continuing to be involved, and miss seeing you at the Assembly on a regular basis.
I'll get there when I can, but the doctors have been very strict with me this summer. Thank you, ma'am.
Well, thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Gary Hart.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
My name's Gary Hart, calling from Nome, resident of Nome. I'm just throwing my two cents in. Four words come to mind. We need help now in the rural area.
Gary, are you representing yourself?
Representing myself and a local businessman.
Go, continue.
Okay, it's just that the two bills discussing, the intent is good, but to me it just seems like if it would be given to the municipalities for energy, power, we would know the money goes to the right place. Also, I'm wondering if you've heard of the Bernie Carl plan. He was supposed to have come down to talk to you folks a week or so ago about creating a state fuel co-op, which would be funded by interested individuals that wanted to belong to it, giving up their permanent fund dividend. And then your gas price and fuel price is set on a yearly rate. His figure was $1 a gallon per year. That seems like a real honest, common-sense program. He states it could be implemented in 90 days. I'm not sure if you're aware of it or if he's talked to you, but we need help bad in the rural area. Landlords are raising their rents up here $200, $300 a month due to the increased fuel cost of $6 a gallon, and it's not going to get any better soon. I appreciate your time and hope we can solve this thing.
Thank you. We'll now go on to Barbara Madison, and it says Barbara Madison plus three.
Yeah, my name is Barbara McManus, and I'm calling in from Ambler, Alaska, up in Northwest Arctic. And I am speaking for myself. I wanted to say that I support HB 4002 and 3. I'm especially interested in the power cost equalization program. That's been a godsend for people up in the bush, because the power has been increasing extremely. Now we're talking about 32 cents for a kilowatt hour, and because the barges have not been able to get up the river, they've added on a 55 cent per kilowatt hour on top of that. So we're looking at 84 cents per kilowatt hour up here, and that affects not just the individuals but the city and some of the city services also, because the water sewer operation includes fuel for heat and fuel for power, and if they were being charged that whole amount, it would cost people $180 for water and sewer, which is something that people can't do when not everybody has a job, and even for those that are working, it's difficult. Anyway, I wanted to say that, and also in support of the House Bill 2000 or 4002, I think that's a good short-term solution, and I support that. We're looking at costs of the last fuel that was flown in here because the river was low was landed at $8.40 per gallon, and that doesn't include what the fuel projects need to add in order to make some kind of profit. So we're looking at, by the time it gets to the consumer, it could be well over $10 a gallon. And that's pretty hard for people to deal with when they're struggling just to put food on their tables. I know the last time I bought a cabbage, it cost $10 for one cabbage. And so it affects, the fuel affects everything that comes out to the bush. We need to, we've had some meetings about this, and we're talking about alternative energy sources and also looking at individuals. And we know there's some grants for individual homes, and we have some people here that are trying to work on that and get grants to make homes more energy efficient. We were also talking about maybe one way as a medium solution that's in between what we're doing now and maybe the alternatives later on that can be put into place is look at maybe giving assistance directly to power companies such as AVAC and Chugach and whoever and other power companies around the state and companies and individual villages. Rather than giving out individual amounts, give a lump sum to the power company so that they can reduce the amount that people have to pay.
Barbara, I'm going to have to ask you to begin wrapping it up.
Okay. Anyway, I agree with many of the other people that spoke on this, and I guess that's pretty much what I want to say.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Then we will go on to George Guy. George, are there?
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, can you hear me?
George?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is George Guy, and I'm the business manager for Critical King, and I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify on the Supplemental Power Cost Equalization Aid and the Alaska Resource Rebate Program and payments made under the program to residents of the state in rural Alaska. And as we all know, we're in the energy crisis throughout the state of Alaska and ABCP, Jalisco region. Fuel prices are at an all-time high. Electric kilowatts rate keep increasing due to high fuel costs, and hard choices have been made these past couple of years for food, fuel, and utility bills, house bills. Many families have no fuel to keep our homes heated. Electric companies in rural Alaska are faced with high fuel costs, so we might have to conserve our fuels by shutting off the generators this coming winter. Potential fuel shortages will occur for in the middle of winter due to the high cost of fuel for utilities. Residents of the state of Alaska and we're in dire need of assistance. The energy rebate can help so we can keep our homes heated, pay for electrical bills, and as we are approaching a very scary winter. As residents of the state of Alaska, United States citizens, we are asking for your support in passing House Bill number 4002 and 4003. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? All right, thank you very much.
We will
then go to Vern Cleveland.
Hello, my name is Vern Cleveland. I'm calling from Norvik, Northwest Riding Borough, and I represent myself in the city. With that $1,200 what Chair, apparently is trying to give out to for fuel. Might be worth lots down where they're at in Anchorage, Juneau, or someplace down there. But up here, with the fuel prices so high, it ain't going to last very long for the fuel. And the way our prices are going up, the gas going up and everything, we can't afford to live. Everybody's moving away from the village down to like to Anchorage, like what they said, and for lower costs. So, and we're going to be really hurting this year if we don't get any help from anywhere. You know, it's going to be down to the rural, down to us here in the bush. So, I will support anything that could help us out in the villages. And thank you guys very much.
Thank you. Any questions? So we will then go to James Hotchkiss.
And welcome to the $4 Club.
Thank you. We'll now go to James Hotai.
Close, Hotai.
Hotai.
I appreciate the time to speak to you. And right off the bat, Sarah's $1,200 won't make a dent in the cost of trying to survive in the winter of Alaska. The state constitution mandates that the resources of the state shall be used to the benefit of all Alaskans. Currently, all Alaskans are not enjoying any benefit from the mineral resources of the state. The state has a coffer brimming with money. The oil companies have coffers brimming with money. The rest of us are looking for coffins, because we're going to die of starvation in this state or freeze to death either way. We need to take the state's royalty oil and turn some of it over to the local refiners at $15 a barrel at cost, with instructions to the refiners that, hey, you pass the savings on to the consumers of the state. There is no other way that people are going to survive up here unless you reduce the cost of heating oil, diesel, gasoline. And there, the state legislature, our friends and neighbors, need to realize that the time is short. We're running out of it. About 4 more weeks, winter's going to start slapping people, and $5 to $10 a gallon, for you can't survive. We need to get the cost of oil down. I'm all for any rebate. I think maybe we should do $1,200 every 2 months until we can figure out how to get this crisis over, because $1,200 buys 200 gallons of gasoline or diesel currently here in Valdez. 200 gallons doesn't heat most houses, but for about 3 weeks. So that's just a very pitiful attempt to placate the masses. And the people who live in the bush are the people that everybody's proud of. The lifestyle of Alaska, the bush Alaska, that's where that's a dream. Well, right now, it's a nightmare. We need to do our best to get the cost of fuel down. There's no other way. No other option, unless you just pour money, good after bad, into the pockets of these refiners. I have no problem with the distributors making their money. I have no problem with the refiners making a profit. We own the oil. Every individual Alaskan owns the oil, the royalty. We are a partner in the mineral industry of Alaska. It's a business. It's not socialism. It's a business. And we all need to realize we're business owners getting very little, if any, dividend from our business. How much more time have I got left?
1 minute.
Oh, good Lord. Sorry about this, everything too loud. Well, I just have I'm afraid for my neighbors and friends and my relatives and people I care about in the state, from Metlakatla all the way to Kaktovik and Barter Island. We're not going to make it unless we get the cost of heating oil down, and gasoline and diesel. We are being trapped in our own homes. The cost of food is astronomical because of the cost of freight, of shipping. Get the cost of diesel down. That is I get lost for words once in a while because I get so wound up. We have to. If nothing else, the state should buy the refineries and run them themselves. Heck, we're capable. We can run a ferry system quite successfully and other businesses, except for milk. But we need to get the cost down. There's no other. You can song and dance all we want about rebates, lower the cost of power. If the cooperatives could buy diesel for $1 a gallon, the cost of electricity would go down. And we sure as hell can afford to give a couple hundred thousand barrels of oil to these refiners locally and say, go at it. Let them make their money, but pass the savings for the reduced cost over. That'll cost the state a whole lot less money than $1 billion every 2 months in rebates.
James, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to start wrapping up.
Okay, well, I'm wrapping up. let's turn the crude oil over to the refiners. If they don't want to refine, buy them out and operate the refineries ourselves. We have no other way of surviving unless we jointly reduce the cost of fuel. Everything else is lip service to insanity. Well, thank you much for your time. I appreciate you. And I'll victimize you next time. Thanks.
Thank you. And we have one final person in Tok, and that is Jim Floyd.
Yes, ma'am. Greetings to the House Community of Regional Affairs from Tok, Alaska. My name is James Floyd. I represent myself. I just have a few observations or questions for the committee. One is whether or not the state of Alaska has considered in this whole equation the devaluation of the U.S. dollar that is occurring right now. Last checked, it was falling even against the peso down in Mexico. I believe it was something like 10 pesos to the dollar. The last cost that I checked on a barrel of oil was something like 137, with speculation up to 200. The number 200 or possibly higher is occurring right now, depending on what would happen with world events. So I guess my question or observation would be if this has been kind of worked in or considered in the fact that you're rebating in terms of dollars, and it's so linked up to a devaluating dollar, or if perhaps something has been considered where you would pay in terms of gallons or cords of wood, vice actual dollars. And I thank you for taking my question.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments here? Thank you very much, Ms. Floyd. And the bill, as it now stands, is in dollars, not in gallons or in cords.
Yeah, I know.
Is there anyone else, either online or in the audience, who would like to testify? Well, seeing and hearing no further testimony for now, I'll give you a synopsis of what's going to happen at the next meeting, which is going to be on June 22nd, and that's going to be in Juneau and in room 124. The agenda is going to include continued testimony and questions and answers from the following departments: Revenue, Law, Energy, and Department of Health and Social Services. That is on July 22nd, and on July 23rd, we will have a continuation of public testimony. So with that, it is 6:10, and I'm going to adjourn this meeting.